bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Hello and welcome to the Photo Show from the British Tech Network. My name's Carl Madden. And I'm here to bring you all the photographic news with a, it was going to be a dynamic duo talent, but thanks, fortunately, James Kenny joined us at last time, making it a terrific trio.
Was that as ballast for the dynamism?
Yes. So let's go on and meet our panel. As I say, first up is James Kenny. How are you, sir, joining us again?
Good, thanks, Carl, yeah.
Okay, thank you for
that. That's it. That's all he is. Yeah. Good, thanks.
What do you want to know?
Cheers, glad you came. Yeah, great, fantastic.
Yeah, right, see you later, bye.
Bye.
Below I'm all right.
We have the usual Mr. Ewan Rankin. How are you doing?
I'm all right, mate. How are you doing?
Fine, knackered this week. Feels a bit weird because it's a Thursday instead of a Friday.
Sorry, my fault entirely.
I know. I
do apologise.
And lastly, but no means least, we have Mr. Alex G. Fox. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm perfectly well. Thank you.
Okay, another quick one. Thanks for that. I'm working out a safety net here, guys. Okay, so this week's news. Well, first up, we see Canon sees the light. Well, light leak, at least. Nikon updates its entry DSL cameras, adds Wi-Fi. Uh-oh, for a photographer, the O2, again. Nikon introduces a super fisheye lens. And what does your DSLR need? Well, it needs a mount for your iPhone, of course. Plus, the guys all here get to critique my choice of a holiday camera. They'll probably slag it off, but there you go. But first up, Canon confirms there is a light leak issue on the 5D Mark III. It has emerged that the new Canon has a light leak issue. The trouble is when used in very dark conditions, if the operator activates the LCD backlight, it affects the camera's metering system, causing a 1-3 stop error. Now, as of today, Canon have stopped shipments while they investigate the matter. Is this a big blow to Canon, as it first appears to be? And do you think they'll be able to find a way of fixing this other than having to do a complete recall? Guys?
Black masking tape.
Ah, but isn't it on the inside?
That's on the inside, yeah.
Yeah, you just don't turn the light on, because I actually watched a video that shows daylight hitting that screen does exactly the same thing. So it's not an electronics fault even. It's the actual light itself shining through, because I mean, one of the initial thoughts were maybe it's an electronic fault. You turn the light on and somewhere in the circuitry it's altering it, but it's not. It's actually one of the sensors that are reading the ambient light is reading that as a light. So daylight hitting that screen is doing exactly the same thing. I think it's a massive problem. No, but this is their flagship model. Okay, you've got your very, very top of the range, but this is their best camera that's affordable by enthusiasts and professionals alike. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, I'm a Nikon man, and I don't want this to happen because there's going to be enough. It is a really, really good camera, but this isn't even a sort of an Apple antenna gate. This can't be fixed easily, and if this is as big a problem as it looks like, I hate to think this what this could cost them.
What do you reckon, Ewan? Canon man?
I mean, Russ in the chat room said, why not just call it Instagram mode and be done with it? I mean, bokeh is paid for, isn't it? You buy filters for bokeh. I don't have a problem, really. I mean, good practice would have always told you that if you were shooting in a dark scenario, you would want to meter accurately, and you wouldn't want any other sources of light that may even pollute the area. So, I've used the, in low light situations, I've used the light on the top for the LED to just check my settings. But when I'm happy that the priority that I've selected and the basic settings that I wanted are there, even if they're manual, the light goes off and then I shoot. I don't think it's that big an issue in terms of how it'll functionally affect you using the camera, but in terms of actually fixing it, because they can't just leave it. It's a fault. People have got every right to go back and demand their money back. It's millions. I mean, to actually pull it back and change it, you're talking about taking most of the camera to pieces just to replace the cup that's holding the light, and that's a lot of money. That's a design cock-up as well. It's not a manufacturing cock-up. The seat for the light has not been manufactured properly, or they specified the wrong seat.
What do you reckon, James? Do you reckon someone's getting their bottom kicked over at Canon for this?
I would hope so, yeah. I think they've shot themselves in the foot with this. You know, they needed to step the game up to bring it back to Nikon. And, you know, if this is going to be a serious problem, they're going to have to recall the whole lot and fix them all. It's going to be hugely difficult for them. And in terms of what Ewan said, you know, like, yeah, you would use a little screen on the top in low light, but you could use the back one to, you know, check your focus and all the rest of it. But it's going to be trouble for someone.
The trouble is, it's not only just when you've got that light on, it's when light hits that. So for instance, if you're outside and you're as the photographer in the sun and the person you're shooting is in the shade, you're going to be underexposed by 3 stops because it's not metering through the lens. It's taking an ambient metering through that hole. You know, and that's a massive problem. It's a lot bigger problem than just that light going on and off. You're going to need to actually cover that with your hand if you're outdoors taking a picture. It's going to affect it that much. Yeah. So I can't see anything other than a recall.
No, I can't either.
No, it's a shame for them.
I mean, 1 to 3 stops is pretty correctable, though. I mean, you wouldn't.
Yeah, but this is also an amateur. It's not completely amateur, but
it's,
you know,
it's a pro level camera. No, I grant you.
Yeah, I mean, how much is a 5D Mark III? I mean, if you bought a car and it wouldn't turn left properly, you'd be a bit annoyed. It's as fundamental as that, as far as I'm concerned.
No.
Metering system is wrong, it's wrong.
No, agreed. What I'm saying is, it's a massive problem in the fact that it's a product recall without a doubt, and it's going to cost millions to fix something that's actually just a very simple cock-up. If you were a photographer, you would be able to compensate for this very easily.
And what about the ones doing the factories on production line? How long do you reckon this will going to take to find and repair?
Well, you said they've stopped them there.
Yeah, but yeah, that's what I'm saying. So the ones that are like waiting to be built, it's obviously something on that production line that's wrong.
Mm.
And that's why they just shut them down. They're not making any money, and they're just playing probably right into Nikon's hands, like James said.
Redesign.
Yeah, it could be fundamentally as big as that, couldn't it?
It's going to be expensive for them, whichever way it goes.
Is this one of the Canons that's been is late on the release anyway because of all the tsunami damage?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh dear. It doesn't rain, it pours, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, moving over to Nikon. Nikon, however, on a bit of a roll. They have updated their entry-level DSLR with a 24-megapixel camera called the D3200, and as we're always going on about, it has optional Wi-Fi.
Hey.
Camera boasts a 24 megapixel imager, 1080p 30 frames per second video mode. It's a DX format CMOS sensor, 44 frames per second shooting, ISO range between 100 and 6400 with a higher setting of 12800. Retails for $700, $700, sorry, and available in late April. Now, this is an entry level DSLR, and it looks very good, I must say. And with the optional Wi-Fi, which they're calling a WU1A,
optional.
It costs $60, but you're available in May, and can broadcast smartphones up to 49 feet away. Obviously, the 50 foot was just too much for them to handle. The initial release can upload images and offer remote viewing and shutter release. A free app will be available for Android version 2.3, so if I correct, that's Gingerbread, I believe, or higher, or released, and they will be releasing an iOS version later in the year. So, guys, another step to bringing a DSLR to a connected world?
No, because this is optional.
Yeah, but it's only $60.
Yeah, I mean, $60 is not... quid. I mean, what's their normal Wi-Fi? £500 or something?
Oh, man,
Is that you trying to defend Canon there, or am I slagging off Nikon, by the way?
No, it's not. No, absolutely. I mean, because as far as I'm aware, Canon do an optional one as well that's about £175. I mean, there's been optional Wi-Fi on DSLRs for 10 years. So why sell another camera with optional Wi-Fi? Stick the damn thing in the computer. Stick a Bluetooth in there that'll transmit, you know, in the camera rather. I'm sorry, I'm animated now. Go to someone else.
Alex.
Right, not to contradict Ewan. Right,
yeah, but you've got fanboy written all over your fucks. Don't even think about it.
Right, well, look at this camera, right? It doesn't even leak light. No, as an entry-level camera, I'll tell you what, if I've got to be honest, fanboy or not, if you had 600 quid or whatever it is in your pocket as a first buy, I'm going to Jessup's or whoever sells these things, I want to buy a entry-level, which this certainly isn't entry-level, I don't care what they call it, an entry-level DSLR, you're not going to go anywhere else other than this camera, are you? The megapixels are high, but this has got the same low noise function. It's got the same processing as the D4. I mean, I think it's something I was thinking and something I did discuss earlier, actually, but I think this is Nikon's attempt to do the thing that Ewan talks about rightly is when you start on your DSLR journey, the first camera you buy, once you start buying lenses, that's where you stay for predominantly the rest of your life, where DSLRs are concerned. Now, if this is the first camera you're going to buy, the chances are you're never going to move away from Nikon. I just think you're going to buy the lenses, you're going to get a hell of a lot of camera. And as for the Wi-Fi, the fact that the difference with this is that, okay, maybe they could have built it in. I'll give that to you. But the fact that they've partnered it with Android apps and iOS apps says to me,
huzzah,
they've really, really said, okay, look, you know, I'd love this ability on any of my Nikons, because there's quite a lot of times where I'm 20 foot up on a ladder trying to look through a viewfinder or a live view screen, trying to look down on something. If I could just sit there holding my phone, winding up my tripod, and yeah, okay, I might have to use autofocus, but if I could wind up the tripod to 30 foot in the air and not have to hang over the top of a ladder trying to see what I'm doing, it would be worth £1,000, let alone $60.
Why do I get the feeling, Alex, that you're going to have a minion running around with the camera while you sit back with your iPad open and go left a bit, right a bit, up a bit, down a bit? So I know
you've got that feeling because you're right. I don't do heights. I don't like heights. But no, the truth is, as an entry camera, I mean, it's got everything. It's got the 1080p. It's got the really high end video. But it's also got little things like it's got a microphone input, which, okay, we've been saying for years, oh, they should do this as standard. They should do that as standard. Other than the fact that maybe the Wi-Fi isn't built in, and there probably is a justified reason, I just don't want to argue with Ewan anymore, why it's not. I think this is getting to that point in cameras where we're saying they should all have this. Well, this one has got this, and it's a sensible price for a camera. Not everyone wants to spend. I mean, I'm saying, oh, the D800, it's only £2,500. Well, only £2,500 for a professional is cheap, but for anyone sensible, they'd look at that and say, that's ridiculous paying £2,500 for a camera. But it's certainly not ridiculous paying £600 for this.
No, it's definitely not. I don't hold with that at all. I mean, I've paid £6,500 for a camera.
Yeah.
It's not about that. And what I think it's about in terms of it for Alex, and this is a very serious issue, is Alex wants it because it comes in red.
Well, yeah, that does help.
That's all.
Alex, it does look nice, though, doesn't it?
Alex wants a red camera to go with his handbag.
It's a lovely red, though, isn't it?
It's a gorgeous red.
I mean, I could get my nails done just like that, couldn't I?
Could be accessorized up.
Yeah. Missy, please, tell us what you think.
Oh, Missy wants it because it's... Mind you, Missy shoots Canon, doesn't she, sir?
Well, she could be coming over to the light side.
Oh.
Apparently, I'm getting some grief now in the chat room. Missy's already saying that it's there's nothing wrong with a red camera. Mm.
Yeah.
It's true. James, you've been very quiet there, trying to keep out of the fight. What do you reckon?
Well, first of all, I've got to take the place of Chris and go, 24 megapixels, what? But yeah, I think it looks pretty cool, you know. This Wi-Fi connectivity is going to be the way to go. They've done it. They could have done it better, I guess, but the key to it is going to be in the how good the application is on your phone, iPad, Android device, however you're going to use it. I think they could sell a lot of them, and it's just another step in front of everybody else.
Are you going to swap over from Canon to Nikon because of it?
No. But I've got too much money invested in Canon, so... I'd be foolish to... Unless something absolutely astonishing was made by Nikon, but Canon are only going to be 6 months behind them, I guess. But again, they're leading the way, aren't they? Mm-hmm. You know.
I was going to ask, so what in a hypothetical world would make you guys switch? Well, all of us, all three of you switch from one brand to another? Or is there absolutely nothing another manufacturer can do to tempt you away?
I don't have a problem with it. I've got to be honest. Seen Ewan's camera. I've used a couple of high-end Canons. I'd honestly say a high-end Canon is as good, if not better, than a high-end Nikon, especially for sports. Okay? Now, that doesn't affect me, but for sports photography, I would honestly say I would happily use a high-end Canon. I think Canon lenses are better. I've always thought, and they certainly look better, but they are better lenses. I would also ask the question... If you were going to go out tomorrow with under £1,000 budget in your pocket to buy your first proper DSLR setup, and you don't have a Canon or a Nikon, and you've got a choice, well, you've got all the other manufacturers as well, of course, but is there anything Canon make that would make you look at that as opposed to this Nikon? That's what I would say. But as for Canon Nikon, some of those top-end Canons for sports photography, I believe, with their lenses, are a lot better than the Nikons.
Good God. Where were you when Foxy decided to say Canon was better than Nikon? I've said that I thought Nikon would do a far better job with the bodies, and they do far better with low light. I've had a go with the D600. I like the video on that an awful lot. I'm getting better. I like the low light as well. I think it shoots as well at 3200 as my Canon does at 800 ISO. Would I jump to Nikon? Money no object. Yes, I would. I definitely would. If I landed a job where all of a sudden, you know, 60 grand became available to spend on new equipment and reinvest in the business, I would move at the moment. But I would have to have a significant amount of disposable income for that to actually happen.
And you, James, finally?
I wouldn't swap. I'd stick with Canon unless I ended up getting a job. The only time I would switch brand was if I needed a camera for a different application. You know, if I had a job where I needed something like a medium format camera, then I'd swap to that. But between Canon and Nikon, I'd stay with Canon because I do a lot of sports type stuff and that's what I like to do. I'm familiar with the Canon, how it works. I've got some good lenses for it, so I'm sticking with what I've got. Thanks.
Mm. Well, that does say one good thing, doesn't it? It says that both Canon and Nikon must be a good manufacturer because of you'd have to twist all our arms to change. So they both must be doing something good.
Yeah.
Or you've all massively invested and you can't get out now.
That's probably the better reason.
Yeah.
Probably the truer reason.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to be nice to them.
Oh, well. Next story. Moving on. Again, we're our favourite security staff. Private security staff are once again under fire after approaching a man who was videoing the O2 from a public space. They approached and asked to see what the man had shot. However, this time the man was a reporter who was testing the approach of security staff for a piece for The Guardian. The guards were reported to have told the reporter they didn't like what he was doing. Nice. And they had the power to approach him under the terrorist law. As opposed to the terrorism law, I suppose. As the O2 is going to be an Olympic venue. So we've heard this story so many times before, and it's getting beyond a joke now. If you guys were in charge of these security guys, what would you tell them how would you tell them to behave in these sort of situations? Because they're obviously getting it wrong, or obviously the memos are not getting through to them.
It's not on their radar, though, to be fair. I mean, I think if you look at us, it's different because we're the afflicted party. We read the photographic press and the technology press, and we know when these incidents occur. The security boss doesn't know about the incident until it occurs, and they don't really think of it as being an issue until they hit the press and they get something negative from it. If it's the average security guard going up to the average tourist and going, "Oi, mate, bugger off," the average tourist is going to go, "Oh, okay," and walk away, and that guy is not going to go back and tell his boss, "I've thrown off another bloody photographer today." So I don't think it's on their radar in the slightest. That's the issue, and that's why it keeps happening. And I think, to be honest, you know, I was a bit upset at the start of all of this when it was a proper issue and it was a serious issue, and it's still a proper issue. But what I'm thinking now is that the press is milking it for every instance that it occurs, and I'm just getting a bit tired of seeing it, to be honest. Because I've never been stopped. I've been all over the place shooting pictures. I've had people come up and say, "You do realise this is a private area?" And I've said, "No, I didn't. Thank you very much. Okay, I'll stop." And I walk away without there ever being a debate. But I've never had anyone come up to me when I've definitely been in a public area and say, "You can't do that."
Yeah. Alex, you have, though, haven't you? I mean...
Yeah, I've been liking it all the time.
But I mean, no, I don't want to keep milking the situation. This is probably the last time I'm going to do it, because hopefully another month or so, the Olympics will be gone and I'll no longer have to be hassled by them.
Yeah, we hate the Olympics.
No, I'll tell you what it is, right? I've got to admit, your question was, what would I do if I was in charge of the security guys?
Yes.
Well, if I was in charge of the security guys, I'd say, do exactly what you're doing. Because I'd say, look, you're going to annoy a few people, whether you're right or wrong. They can say, call the police, and the police are annoying whether they're right or wrong. But they're still not going to be able to take a picture. And let's face it, all we care about is protecting the building, whether we're right or wrong. And at the end of the day, the police will say, "Show us your camera." They'll say, "No," it'll get into a hoo-ha, because it's happened with me loads of times. And then at the end they go, "Yeah, we've been told that you're okay then, so we're on your bike." And then so they've wasted an hour of my time, but I haven't been able to do what they didn't want me to do, whether they had the right to or not. So as far as the security guys are concerned, if I was their boss, I'd tell them to do exactly what they were doing. As far as the law is concerned, you're right. Once the Olympics is over, it don't matter anymore. But, you know, we have got, me, you, James, you, and we've got as much right to pull the terrorist law thing on anyone we want. As a citizen, the terrorism laws apply to us being able to uphold them as well as anyone else. So, you know, they have a citizen's right to annoy the crap out of us. Look, it's not going to go away. It's just like the old days with a bouncer at nightclub. You know very well that the bouncer can't literally punch you in the face to get rid of you. But if he's threatening you and he's twice your size, you're going to leave. And that's what it comes down to. It's bullying, but we're going to have to put up with it because of the Olympics, and hopefully it'll calm down when it's all finished.
Said the short bloke.
Said the short fat bloke. Cheers.
No, I just meant as in your stature is easier to intimidate. That's all I meant, mate.
No, it's called life, having an easy life, mate. You know, it's like I get hassled by the police. I don't mind being hassled by the police, seeing as I've got lawyers in the family, and it's quite good fun taking care of it afterwards. But it's still the fact is I go out to do a job, and I just want to go to the place, do the photo, and go home and get paid for it. I don't want to go to the place, end up in some great long-winded argument with somebody that, you know, arguing isn't their strong point. Hitting me over the head with a mallet might be. So I tend to just give in and go home.
I think Alex is right. You know, they're getting the outcome they want, no matter what. You know, like they're stopping people, whether they say, "Oh, okay, yeah," and just wander off, or, you know, they have a big argument and they get the police, they're still going to stop them, you know, taking photographs. I mean, on the article it says this chap was shooting video from the road, but
he was also a reporter, so it was kind of baiting them a little bit, obviously. He was trying to get a story, so...
Yeah, I mean, I saw a video a while ago. I think it was a German TV guy. He wandered around Berlin or wherever, taking videos of sensitive buildings in his suit and his, you know, his normal clothes. Then he went and dressed himself up as an Arab sheikh and did the same things. And he lasted about 2 minutes before he bungled into the back of a van.
It does make you laugh, though, doesn't it? Because if I was a terrorist, I'd walk around looking like the archetypal terrorist that they're looking for. It's a bit stupid, isn't it? Well, there you go.
Oh, dear. Sunex have bought out a... There's a new Sunex lens, a 5.6mm f5.6 super fisheye lens with a Nikon F mount. I think there's a Canon mount as well. Retails for $800, nice and cheap. Angle view of 185 degrees, focal length 5.6 millimeters fixed. As I say, aperture f5.6. Depth field 50 centimeters to infinity. I don't know what that means. It includes stitching software. Is this a lens that interests anyone here? And could you find a use for a lens such as this?
Well, you could take that kind of picture with it, which really is fisheye. You can nearly see the back of your own head there, I think.
Well, yeah, if you'd done two shots of 185 degree, you'd just, that would be it. That would be a total circumference, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It's a bit too fisheye. I can't see the picture, but I can imagine what it's like.
I'm quite happy to admit that I'm utterly and totally wrong, but I wouldn't have thought it was possible to shoot a picture of 185 degrees.
Yeah, I think you're right there, mate.
Just spitballing here.
That lens must stick out a long way.
Not being a doctor of optics, you can't bend light back on itself, which is what you, I just don't see that, mate.
Well, that's not true, because I am a professional doptician.
No, go on then, mate.
Actually, no, I'd be honest. Of course, I'm not disagreeing with you. Look, if they say it's 185, let them have it. You know, it's like the bloke with the baseball bat. Let them have it. It's not worth it. But I'd like to play with one of these. I mean, I'm not sure. You know, in the same way as...
For $800, you'd like to play with it.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not going to buy one anyway, so they might as well say it's 8,000. I'd still like to play with it. The point is, if... You've got things like Instagram where people like these slightly weird and wonderful pictures. I can see this sort of taking off. You know, you could do maybe not so much portraiture as an individual, but say group shots in this. You could have sort of, you know, the way you get them concave sort of mirrors that you stick on outside a building so you can see who's walking around the corner. Maybe you could have concave sort of pictures. It could be a new artistic way of taking pictures of groups or, you know... There is a use for this. It's an artistic use. And yes, you've got the same old security use. But if it was security use, you'd be walking around looking for people with really elongated heads that go to a point in the middle. And there's not many of them walking around.
Miss is in the chat room. She says, this is exactly what I see after a couple of dry martinis. And there's a question for the panel from Russ. He says, what on earth would you use it for? And I think the point really is that picture there that we've managed to get of it, explaining it, is not a very good fisheye picture, because it's a great fisheye picture for showing what fisheye looks like, but actually you wouldn't use an image to show a general view like that. You'd use fisheye to highlight a single subject in the centre. But the trouble is at 5.6 millimetres, that person is utterly distorted. I mean, generally you'd stop at I wouldn't go beyond 12. Unless I wanted to get, you know, something that was stylistically deliberately, that rounded. If you wanted to show a subject properly with things around it, then you'd stop at 12 millimeters.
See, I've got a couple of fisheye lenses that I use for skateboarding and BMX photography, and I've got an 8 millimeter, but Sigma also make a 4 millimeter, which is ridiculously wide. But I found that the 8 millimeter was too wide. I have a 10 to 17, I think, which is plenty. That's a diagonal fisheye, so you get a rectangular picture instead of a circular one.
I agree.
But you've got to be super, super close, and you're going to get a BMX pedal in the face if you're not careful.
There is also the argument that with the corrective ability of software, you could use this to take a picture of something. Right, for instance, the other day I had to take a picture of a painted ceiling, and the lowest I had was, I think it was a 12. Well, the lowest I had went down to a 12. And I had my camera lying on the floor, and I was having to shoot things, pick up the camera all the time to see what I'd got. And it took me 3 pictures to get most of this ceiling in. And I used Photoshop to correct them all, and then I stitched them all together, and it looked brilliant. But... because it's a mathematical equation, I dare say to correct something at 5.6 fisheye is the same as being able to correct something at 12 mil wide. So this could have taken the picture of that room for me, and with correction, electronic computer correction. So you could find a reason for needing this. Even e.g. the original picture that came out of it might not be that useful, but once you'd actually manipulated it electronically, you know, properly, it might become a useful tool to have.
When I shot stuff with the 8mm and pulled it straight into correct perspective in Photoshop, the quality in the corner is just so abysmal it's not worth doing.
Oh, okay. Now, I did wonder if it was pretty crap. But, yeah, I mean, what I ended up, funnily enough, with that thing doing is I only ended up using the not the very middle, but I didn't use the edges of the picture.
Yeah.
So once I stitched it together, I only kept the middle, the important section of the ceiling. I let all the sides disappear because they were rubbish. But, you know, it's there because someone can make it.
Is it not easier to make a fisheye lens because a normal camera lens isn't corrected?
No. I mean, the problem that you got with fisheyes is the distortion of the light itself, the divergence to convergence. The glass is usually horrific to manufacture to get the consistency of the curve. The more curved something is, the harder it is to manufacture it without errors because it becomes thicker and bigger. So, you know, a flat sheet of glass is very easy to manufacture because it's a consistency thing.
Mm.
And then you get a small amount of distortion. I mean, that's the thing is you look at the lenses and we kind of bitch and moan about, you know, oh, it's 155 quid for this or it's 155 quid for that. You know, the way the glass is made and milled is a massive process.
Mm. I think my 8mm is about 620 quid.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
Well,
all this does to me is it makes me feel sorry for fish.
Yeah.
Well, if that lens doesn't float your boat, perhaps there's something else out there that will. What is your DSLR been missing? Well, an iPhone mount, of course. The flash dock for just $40 allows you to mount your iPhone on the hot shoe of your camera. However, I have to ask the silly question, why would you want to do this?
Because you can.
Because it's cheaper than a fisheye lens.
They're saying you could use this to get GPS positioning or to upload things, but you could do that with your phone in your pocket. That doesn't need to be rigged to your camera mount.
Is there a connectivity or is it just place to rest it?
It's just a BluTac if you wanted.
BluTac, that will do just as well, actually, I think.
No. What I like about this story is it, I don't know how you say it, is it TUAW, the website that we got the story from?
Sure.
Unofficial Apple weblog.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you'd say it, though. But what I love about it, I love the story. It's not very often you see a story like that at the end of it. They sort of go, what's it? Like some other dubious products we see from time to time here at Chua, this flash dock appears to be the solution in search of a problem. It's just really good. They've got a whole article and they're basically saying, what the hell's the point of this? Which I just really like.
I had one of those moments where you just think to yourself, I know, I've worked this bit out. And then afterwards, as soon as you think it, before you've actually managed to say it, which has saved your face, is you're sitting thinking, oh, that'd be great because you could use one of those metering apps. No, use a camera.
Yeah.
You know what? If you've got a Canon Mark, whatever it is, 5D Mark III, you might need to use a metering app and use it on manual.
Yeah. You know what? It has solved an age-old problem. It's brilliant. And, you know, the problem is, how do you get $40 off an idiot? Problem solved.
Missy posted a link to something called the iPhone Shutter Grip from PhotoJojo. It looks like just a grip that you place over your phone and then it places a little shutter button instead of you having to use
the volume. There's three of these, aren't they? Belkin have released them, and there's three of them have been released. There's three devices that go with your iPhone, and I've got to say, this one does look excellent. It looks very, very good. It adds a little shutter on that the 30-pin dock connector goes into the end, so you're not actually pressing the volume button, which means that based on the fact it goes in the end, means that you're going to be shooting and not having the problem that you've currently got with the EXIF data not being corrected by the iPhone.
And it's only $40.
Very good.
I mean, I actually equate this to the same sort of people that buy those, you know, those mounts that you get for your iPhone that you can then screw them onto a tripod. You know, people that spend money on silly stuff like that and maybe go on photo walks and...
Like this.
Yeah. Yay. What? You've got one.
I love my glyph. Shout.
Do you call yours Richard?
I use it for propping up when I want to watch stuff on the phone, not so much to mount it on a tripod.
Yeah.
So there.
Missy's saying, what's a quid? There you go. There's a bit more for next week's Worlds Apart.
Order for the show.
A bit like a sov, isn't it?
Okay. Right, this is where I'm going to turn the show into my own personal recommendation tool. So my holiday next month, I've gone out looking for a compact camera I want to take with me, and I've looked at the ones on Amazon and had a little flick through, and I've focused on the Panasonic Lumix DMC SZ1EB compact camera for my trip to sunny Florida. 16.1 megapixel, 10 times optical zoom, HD video recording, ISO 100 to 1600, or high mode of 1600 to 6400. Weighs just 131 grams, which is important because I'm not lugging anything around. So I'm lazy. So what do you reckon? Good choice, poor choice, or should I go back and start again?
Great choice.
Get it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think it was 160 quid.
Nothing wrong with that camera at all.
What no, nice. I like it.
And it's black. Super Chicken's asking what colour it is. It's black.
You've seen the picture.
Oh, sorry. I'm not getting a feed, so I don't know what
people. Yeah, no, see. I've shown a picture of it. I think it's a great camera. Lumix has always been a favourite of mine and Alex's. They do a great job. You can point them virtually anywhere and they'll still get you a decent picture. I think you've pulled a blinder there, mate.
Hey, so you guys.
Good price.
You guys must be teaching me something.
There's a lot around that kind of price that would do a good job. But I think the thing that personally I've had a go with Sharon's mum. We got her a Nikon Coolpix because she likes Nikon, brand loyalty only.
Ah, silly woman.
And I shot a picture with it, and it was a good camera. It's great for her. She takes a picture with it. It looks fine, but it's not as good as the Lumix. And I think that's the thing is when you look at the Lumix across the range has a lot of consistency. Each of the cameras takes great pictures. Sensors are good.
Looks nice as well.
Does?
Yeah.
It's pleasant. It looks like it's shiny and thin. So you're not going to be carrying an awful lot around. So I think that's a good call, mate. I would take it. Actually, what would be interesting is have you got it yet?
No, I'm going to order it probably next week.
Oh, right. Okay, so you hadn't ordered it then. Get the camera and shoot a static picture against your iPhone at 8 megapixels and see what they look like together. Do a comparison at 100% in Photoshop. Send it over. We'll show it.
Okie dokie. Maybe for next week's show then, that'll be hereby. We shall see. Okay, moving on. Which six things? Night photography is the subject this week. Which six tools, trips, or tips would you use to capture exciting-looking nighttime urban scenes?
Let's see which one can say it first.
Squeaky toy.
Yeah, right. What do I say? Well, obviously, right, let's get the basics out. Because I was nice last week and let Chris get the easy one. You need a tripod.
Good. Good tripod, yes.
I mean, I can carry on, but I don't want to take them all.
Go on in one each and then go around twice.
Okay.
Go on, Ewan.
I would take with me a torch or a laser pointer. Because if you've got something that you want to focus on that's in the darkness, laser pointers are great because you get a good distance out of them. And point it at the object and then you can use your autofocus on the reflection off the laser pointer. Because it's a point focus, it has worked really, really well.
Mm-hmm. James?
Oh, crikey, I'm struggling now.
What were you going to say, laser pointer then?
I was going to say torch. So you've done me there.
I hate to see our newest recruit struggling.
Do you need more time, James?
Where you live, umbrella?
Yeah, umbrella. Woolly hat. That's what you need.
So dress up warm.
Yeah.
I would. You've got two choices. You can either, open it up to get more light in. But what happens to that? If you've got sort of this was an urban shoot, I think I read. Yeah, urban scenes. Street lights and things. If you open it up to sort of, I don't know, 3.5 or 5.6 or whatever it happens to be, the aperture, you're going to get an awful lot of that sort of lens flare-y that comes off of. The contrast between light and dark. So if you've got a dark sky and a street light, you're going to get all that, which you might want, you're going to get all that sort of light that shoots off in all directions. as if you were squinting. So to get around that, you need to stop down to sort of F18 or something. You need to go a lot smaller. Okay, the length of time is going to be increased, and you've got to judge that. If you want something that, if you want sort of car lights going, then obviously you want to stop down to make the time longer so you get, you know, more streaks of light. But if you want sort of the street lights not to look like stars, actually to look like street lights, then you've actually got to stop down a lot more. But it's a balancing trick. It's actually quite an interesting balancing trick. If you stop down more, then you get better, more consistent reflections of water, for instance. I mean, when we were up in town on that photo walk, I noticed everyone was taking pictures, but they were doing, rightly so, they were judging the time. They were letting the camera judge the time, and they were setting the aperture.
Mm-hmm.
So the speed was being judged by the camera. And so when people took exactly the same picture but using different apertures and put them up against each other, you could actually see a significant difference in sort of the sparkliness of the reflection and various things like that. The basic picture was the same, but the lights, say, on the buildings had straight lines to them. They were straight lights rather than fuzzy lights. So play with the aperture, because it really does make a big difference, especially mm-hmm. in digital photography.
I would say as well, don't shoot a manual, so you're choosing your shutter speed and aperture, but make sure you can choose your ISO as well, because you'll obviously be able to get different combinations of effects and keep the noise down, because if you crank it right up to 1600, 3200, you're going to get a lot of, if you've got black sky in, for example, you're going to get a horrible sort of blue and red dots all over there. So if you put your ISO right down to like 100, say, then you'll be able to get a longer shutter speed, say, and, you know, balance your equation for your exposure in different ways.
Good. Ewan, last one.
I thought this series, this episode was, or this thing was six things. So if you're going to take things rather than a decent technique, I would go down to Hobbycraft and I'd get myself some clear gels and some coloured gels and that kind of stuff. Get a big sheet of them. Go down to B&Q and get myself one of those super luminous torches that does like 3 million candle watt things. They're only about 25 quid. And I'd put gels over the front and try casting different shades of light all over the place. The thing that you've got is, if you're going out to shoot an image in the dark, you're not going to get an image because you need light. So the thing is, then you want to be able to start to manipulate and control the light. So take things with you that will help you, either reflect light, take a big reflector down with you that you can put in a corner that will pull light back into a shadowed area that you want to lift, and create light in the area. That's the key part, because no light, no image.
I just want to add one myself. I don't think anyone mentioned this, but use the timer or remote shutter.
Good lad.
Yeah. And your also, manual, Carl. Don't forget your manual.
Also, I would...
No, you've had your two. You've had your two, Foxy.
No, just
you've had your two.
It goes back to the question we had last week. Don't put on your vibration reduction.
Oh, yes.
Because it will fight against you if you're on a tripod at night, because the lights, the fuzziness of the lights makes a vibration reduction system kick in and you'll get an out-of-focus picture.
Can I just add... Last word.
No, you've had your two.
Last word.
Got him.
No, that's it. Last word.
Okay.
questions, I say. Hi, guys. Thanks for the show. I recently went to a retirement of a colleague and took some photos. The event was in the works canteen and the room has a lot of fluorescent lights, so I didn't take a flash. I shot everything on ISO 800 and followed the rule of P from Missy. The first few shots looked okay and were all at 1/250th of a second or more. But as I shot more and more shots, the pictures really began to vary in tone and some were pretty dim, yet the exposure remained around 250th. Can you explain why this happened, please? And do you have any tips for shooting in such a situation? I can't be the only one. Carl Connor from Devon.
Yeah, but Carl's a hard name, isn't it? Yeah, I could have a good guess what it is. I mean, it doesn't say whether he shot in manual or auto, but when you're in a room full of people, which is like a semi-auto, isn't it?
Professional mode.
Okay, it's professional, but P is programmed. Is that full auto? Is that only part auto?
It's part auto. You set the focus, you set the ISO, and then it it does the rest.
Mm. Okay, so that's the, possibly what it is then, because of when you've got something that's trying to expose for you, when you're in a room and you've got artificial light, your eyes take just an overall of it, but there isn't an overall in a room with artificial lights. If somebody's directly under the light, it's a hell of a lot of difference, but the camera can't really see that at the point where you're focusing. You just, if you've got it on an overall exposure, you know, an overall looking at what's around, if you've got one person wearing a dark suit and one person wearing a white shirt, that will really, really affect your exposure. When you've got an enclosed space with multiple artificial lights in it, you get all sorts of problems. If you change the angle, if you're looking into the light, away from the light, the camera can't necessarily see that, especially if it's using one of those contrast methods for checking the autofocus and the exposure. And it really, really confuses cameras. So in an enclosed space, pointing at different angles with different lights, an overall is all the camera can do, but the fineness of it is massively different. And the fact that you said different tones is what gives it away, because you may have had daylight coming in through a window, which is blue. You got fluorescent, which I think is pink. You got tungsten, which is orange. And it's, to you, your eyes make it up yourself, but you've got a different mix between blue and orange and yellow, whatever angle you're pointing at. And so tonally, it's going to be very, very different. It's very, very difficult. And that's why in situations like this, professionals like me the other night use flash guns in these situations, because it's the only way to completely control the ambient color of the light, plus being able to control the exposure by basically burning out everything else that's in the room. Mm. And that's the only way to do it properly.
Ewan?
I think I answered that.
I think you did, but Ewan, anything to add?
The problem that you've got is that you've gone for a semi-automatic setting, and you've got to lose the auto if you're under fluorescence. Firstly, you've got to change from auto white balance to fluorescent to make sure that you get your Kelvin correct. That's going to be a button change only. The second thing that you've got to do is that fluorescent lights are cyclic. So at the point that, if you're taking a part press with a DSLR, at the point that you partially take your metering for the camera to work it out, you don't know where the cycle of the light is. If you then push through, if you're at 1/250th will capture the cycle of the light. It's too fast. So what you need to do is turn your shooting setting down to shutter priority TV, and turn it to 1/125th, and then it'll ignore the cyclic factor of the lights, and you'll get evenly balanced. They may still be underexposed, but then at that point you can change the exposure with your ISO, or change, not the exposure, your exposure set at 1/125th, but you can change the output exposure on the image using your ISO setting to get a consistency. I think from what you're saying there, if you're saying they're all over the place and there's different values everywhere, it could be mixing of the lights closer to window and further away, as Alex says, but I'm tending towards it's the cyclic light that's going through. So you, at 1/250th, you'll capture the variances in the flicker of the lights.
It's an awful lot. I mean, there's no need to go that fast.
Yeah, I was going to say that 250th sounds pretty quick to me. You know, maybe it's the camera's in its semi-auto mode, doesn't want to set the shutter speed too low, and it's running out of aperture. You know, it can only go to sort of 3.5, say, for example. Then you're going to get a load of dark pictures, because it can't let any more light in that it needs.
Mm. I mean, shooting at 8,
but unless your work's canteen is in a church, it's probably a pretty good location to be using your flash, especially if you've got a hot shoe mounted one that you can bounce off the ceiling.
Now, your iPhone's on that.
That's true.
Mm. Well, some things to try for next time there, then, under fluorescence. Last question this week from Uno Tim. What's a prime lens and what's bokeh?
Ah, bokeh.
Go on, then.
Me? A prime lens is a lens with a fixed focal length, so it won't zoom in or out. You just get what you see through the viewfinder, and that's that. And bokeh is the term for your out of focus background, especially when you say you see the pictures of, you know, Christmas tree lights or whatever that are out of focus, and it makes basically round blobs of colour. That is what the bokeh is.
Roughly. People can get really, really fussy about bokeh.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you know, look, I take my glasses off, everything's bokeh. Put them back on, everything's pucker, but that's different. People are so, I don't want to use the word, that word, because it's rude. People care far too much about this sort of stuff. It's got to be soft edges. You're not allowed any hard edges, and the light has to emit from the middle and decrease towards the outside of the circle made from your spot of light. It's all stuff and nonsense, yeah? You get your picture right, and if the background does what you want it to do and not disorientate you too much, then that's good bokeh. But people shoot just for it, and as far as I'm concerned, it works nicely on a movie. It looks nicely on a Timotei or a Harmony hairspray advert, but in the real world, you get your depth of field right, let the bokeh sort itself out.
Anything to add, Ewan?
I think bokeh's a bunch of pretentious shite myself.
No. Say what you feel.
It's, I mean, basically, an image has got a depth of field, and depth of field, if you want to call it bokeh, that's fine. But bokeh, for what I understand, is that people actually shoot images, which is nothing but that's crap that's out of focus.
And I do that every day.
There's no subject that's in focus. It's just it's a style of photography whereby everything's blurry and out of focus, and there's repetitions and that kind of stuff. And you get lenses. If you get a photo Jojo, you can get little things that sit over the top of your lens with cut out hearts and things like that, and you get bokeh repetitions of stuff across it. Fine, if you want to do that, shoot it. And if you want to use it as a background on a green screen or something, all for it, absolutely. But people are, Alex is right, people get so uptight over it, and it's just pretentious shite.
There's two bleeps this week, by the way.
No, I'm not bleeping those.
Ooh.
We're allowed to get rude from now on then, lads.
No, we're not. Ewan is.
It's a bokeh of...
Another one. Yeah, there you go.
I won't get that title through iTunes, that's for sure.
I thought Boca Juniors was a football club in somewhere like San Paolo. I can't remember that.
This load of bokeh and all the other bokeh on the network is brought to you by the wonderful folks at UK2.net. They supply all our bandwidth and they keep us on the air. If you could support us by supporting them, we'd be much appreciated. If you just go to our website, scroll down, look for their link, and buy any of their services in there at the moment, like you can integrate a Facebook iframe onto your website, or vice versa, your website into their iframe, I should say. VPN servers, dedicated servers you can have, and also they have the site builder. We have, at the moment, the competition is you can still win a brand new iPad. All you have to do is go in there and judge the two sites that the two people have made, and you're in with a chance of winning. It's a wonderful service. And also, if you use the offer codes BagelTech, you'll get 15% off any services you purchase. And if you use BagelDNS, they'll waive the DNS transfer charges. What could be more better? You just bring your site into UK2.net and they'll keep it running for you, just like they keep us running.
Well, love them.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So, guys, where can we get hold of you? James?
You can get me at _335 on Twitter, and you can find me on the British Tech Network Flickr group, Forging My Active Data.
And how how's your project going?
60 to go. Get it.
Project 365. Well done, mate. I'm in admiration of you. Well. I mean, I've shot nearly 1,000 images in the last week. But I couldn't shoot 365. That had to mean something.
Yeah, well, they don't mean much, to be honest with you. I'm losing the will.
The only one that really bothered me was the picture of your wine cork. I knew you'd kind of lost it there for a bit.
Yeah.
Finish it off.
Very good.
It was corking. Very good. Finish it off, though, dude, and then we'll make a photo book out of it.
Yeah, that'll be
the... Are you going to get a photo book made out of them?
Yes, I am.
Good man.
And I'm going to hand the baton over to someone.
I'll buy it.
All right, well, fair enough then.
Be a fiver.
Ewan, it's been more than that, mate.
You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow the network at Bagel Tech. At British Tech
Every
News.
Week.
At British Tech News on Twitter. And you can also get me for commercial photography work at ewanrankin.co.uk.
Good stuff. And Alex, where can we get hold of you?
I'll be next to Ewan at the bathroom sink, handing him the bar of soap to wash his filthy mouth out with. And Alex G. Fox on Twitter.
My name's Carl Madden. You can get me at Twitter at Clausio101. That's our show. Hope you enjoyed it. Happy snapping. See you next time.